Welcome to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters hopes to increase your ecological intelligence by bringing you news and reports from around the world. Smart Prosperity Institute, formerly Sustainable Prosperity, is a national research network and policy think tank based at the University of Ottawa. It produces world-class research and works with public and private partners, all to advance practical policies and market solutions for a stronger, cleaner economy. Topics covered by the Institute include accelerating clean innovation, valuing and protecting nature, economic tools for cities and communities, building the circular economy, and the transition to a low-carbon economy. I spoke with Catherine Monahan, Senior Research Associate with the Institute.
One of our big areas right now is the circular economy, so that's why we did this one particular report on household waste, because we see this as an important slice of the circular economy model. So circular economy model is generally looking at how can we maximize resource and energy efficiency.
Catherine, welcome to Earth Matters, and give us an idea of what you've been working on.
Hi, well, thanks very much for having me. I'd like to talk to you guys today about a policy brief that we wrote here at the Smart Prosperity Institute regarding policy tools for reducing household waste. Basically, we sort of identified that waste is a huge and growing concern here in Canada as well as internationally. At the moment, there's a big push to recognize the enormous stream of plastics that are entering the oceans, for example. So we really wanted to look at some of the policy tools that we could use in terms of incentivizing behavior to help households reduce waste and hopefully be a part of the solution.
So tell us why this is an important issue now compared to transportation or building vis-a-vis greenhouse gas emissions. Why is it coming to the forefront?
Well, basically, we noticed that the way that greenhouse gas emissions are recorded in the National Inventory Report, waste is actually only responsible for 3% of Canada's greenhouse gas emissions. But that is actually only sort of the direct emissions associated with the actual, the sort of the waste management and the emissions, mostly methane emissions that are arising from the landfills. But if you think about waste and the products that we are throwing away more from sort of a life cycle approach, then you notice that there's actually a lot of greenhouse gas emissions associated with the goods and products that we're throwing away. So basically, all of the supply chain that's gotten those goods into your hands in the first place. So, the extraction of the raw materials, the energy required to transport the items to shops, all of those types of steps along the supply chain result in greenhouse gas emissions. So, for example, there was a study in the United States by the Environmental Protection Agency, and they found that actually 42% of total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions are associated with producing, processing, transporting, and disposing of commodities and food.
Right. Well, how do you factor in the total cost of the life cycle, whether it's embedded or embodied greenhouse gas? How do you factor in that whole life cycle analysis?
How can you do it? Well, we need to do a related Canadian study to sort of help mirror the one that was done in the U.S., but you can, there have been lots of studies already done which look at sort of the embodied emissions within goods. So basically you sort of track where the good has come from, and you look at a life cycle assessment of like what kind of raw materials are present within the good, how far has the good been shipped to get to the final destination, and then you can use emission factors to get sort of a rough idea about all of the energy and associated emissions that have arisen along that process chain.
That's quite an undertaking because the supply chains often extend beyond one country or even one continent. and different countries have different standards or different measurements, or some don't even have any sort of analysis of those life cycle aspects. So how do you work around that?
No, absolutely. And I mean, and just to be clear, so we didn't actually do a related Canadian study in this field. So we're hoping that we will actually maybe be able to look at that going forward. That's something that the Smart Press Radio Institute is sort of interested in doing more on. But basically, it's a lot of modeling. You do have to make a lot of assumptions about where these things are coming from. But you're absolutely right. The supply chains are extremely complex. And a lot of times products are manufactured in countries that have much higher emission intensities than we have here in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Let's dial it back a little bit and talk about Smart Prosperity Institute. It's at the University of Ottawa. Tell us about the institute and what it does and how long it's been in existence.
Sure. Okay. Well, so Smart Prosperity Institute, it's run out of the University of Ottawa. Basically, its mandate is to look at sort of, you know, smart policy tools that can be used to incentivize improvements in the environment, but also at the same time to make sure that our economy is strong. It's really looking at sort of, you know, that relationship of the economy and the environment walking hand in hand, and, you know, making sure that people are aware that one doesn't come at the expense of the other. There's, you know, generally policy can be designed in a way that is the most cost-effective as possible, and often can actually even lead to improvements in the economy, such as increased innovation or accelerated energy efficiency or resource efficiency. So we're looking at sort of all of those kind of things, and specifically how can we maximize policy, environmental policy design to ensure that both the environment and the economy would be strengthened.
Okay, so you generate reports and distribute them to government and industry and the average person. Give us an idea of the range of topics that you look at.
Okay, sure. I mean, one of our big areas right now is the circular economy. So that's why we did this one particular report on household waste, because we see this as a important slice of the circular economy model. So circular economy model is generally looking at how can we maximize resource and energy efficiency along the entire supply chain. So we have a few policy briefs out that sort of summarize the general topic of the circular economy. We also have a big program line in innovation. We recently released a big report on innovation and tools to sort of drive Canadian competitiveness going forward. We also do a lot of reports on low carbon economy, carbon pricing mechanisms, and as well as we have a program line on species at risk, natural capital, and municipal assets. So quite broad, actually, the different topics that we cover.
Right. And this most recent study that was released in April of 2018, Economic Tools to Reduce Household Waste, why look at it from an economic point of view? Is the environment not a big enough issue? It always seems to be at the top of surveys. People say they're interested in the environment. Why do we need an economic incentive to do the right thing?
I think we find that generally economic tools do work. Pricing. There's two ways. There's the incentivizing good behavior. So I can sort of talk about some of the tools that we discuss in the report perhaps afterwards. But generally, when you incentivize behavior, you offer some sort of financial reward for doing something, and in this case, something good for the environment. So, for example, returning used items, and perhaps the shop or store will give you a little store credit, so you have like that extra incentive to make sure that you're bringing those things back. And on the other hand, we have environmental pricing. So a lot of people are familiar with that from carbon pricing, but there's also lots of other environmental pricing mechanisms in existence. So one of the ones that we're looking at in this report is the pay-as-you-throw or variable waste collection pricing, where you're actually paying per garbage bag or per weight of the items that you're throwing away. And basically what these types of instruments do is they give you an incentive to avoid paying the cost. So you don't want to be polluting as much, or you don't want to be generating as much waste, because you'll be paying higher fees then. So you have an extra incentive beyond sort of knowing that it's right for the environment to sort of, you know, to help change that behavior and help them sort of motivate people to find solutions, right? And I mean, one of the other things that we really like about economic tools is that they're very flexible. So we're not saying, okay, you must do this, or you cannot buy this, or, you know, you have to use this certain type of technology or this certain type of way of doing things. We just say, okay, we're going to put a sort of incentive across the board, and we'll let consumers or households or whoever the policy is targeted at determine the best way of actually meeting that financial incentive. So a lot of times it leads to innovation in the marketplace that policymakers would never be able to really come up with on their own, right? So it puts the power in the hands of the people that are actually sort of on the ground having to live these things.
Why put the emphasis on the consumer? What does your report say about producer responsibility?
Yeah, so no, absolutely. We recognized straight away that the waste challenge is much bigger than just at the household level. And there's a lot that governments, producers, and as well as households will need to do to act to better address the challenge. We just decided that we would focus on the household level for this particular report to show that there were some practical solutions that policymakers could look at, as well as some practical solutions that businesses or municipalities could look at. Definitely there's a huge role for producers as well, and for governments in mandating producer responsibility programs, and there's been lots of reports and other analysis on that as well.
Your report also mentions that there are gaps in industrial and commercial reporting. Is there a way to speed that up or fill in those gaps?
For the statistics gathering, yeah. I mean, I think that generally people are aware that there is increasing interest in having that type of data. It can be, I mean, one of the challenges that Statistics Canada probably faces with that is that we're such a big country and we're so diverse. So it's hard to send out a survey to everyone, right? And exactly know who to target. But I think, like, as we're sort of going into this new phase of really, you know, the waste challenge is really rising to the top of mind of policymakers. I'm hoping that that we'll also be in a position to start gathering better data here in Canada.
Right. So let's go back to the economic incentives. There's a push and a pull. There's the push to prevent, and then there's the pull to say, if you're going to take you're going to use a plastic bag at the grocery store, it's going to cost you 5 cents.
And it might be helpful to sort of walk you through a few of the different policy tools that we looked at on the report.
Sure.
And then we can talk about sort of which ones would sort of reflect the push or the pull type of incentive. So the first one was the pay-as-you-throw fees that I mentioned earlier. So basically, again, like, these are the charges per garbage bag or the weight thrown away. So what you would do is if you're the municipality, you would say, okay, anything that's going to be thrown away has to be in this type of garbage bag, or it has to be tagged with a certain, with a little garbage tag that you would put on the bags, and then you would charge whatever the fee was for those type of garbage bags or tags. So basically, you wouldn't just be able to throw away anything you wanted, or regardless of weight, how much you put on the curb, it would all be tied to sort of, how much you can fit in the bag. So there's actually already 200 communities across Canada that are using this type of system, and we had a bunch of proof from different communities about how this is actually working. And we see that we've seen huge decreases in the amount of garbage generated, and recycling rates have also gone up. And some of these successes have been for as little as $1.75 per bag of garbage. And in other countries, even in the United States, and as well as a bunch of other international jurisdictions, we've also seen a lot of success rates with this. So it's really a policy that's really incentivizing people to think about each item that they're putting out, and basically at the end of the day, it ends up rewarding good behavior, right? So it ends up rewarding you for reducing the amount of waste that you generate, because then you'll be ultimately paying less. And just one last thing to say about that particular policy is that it can also be revenue neutral to a certain extent, because normally you're paying for this type of service to your municipal property taxes. So you could do the policy to make sure that you're reducing those property taxes by the amount of the waste collection fees, so that you're actually, in that way, if you're a household that's reducing a bunch of waste and doing well, you'll be paying less, and you'll no longer be subsidizing your neighbor's wasteful behavior. So did you want me to go through a couple of the other policy tools that we also looked at?
Sure, but let me just point out one point on that. So you're talking about revenue neutral, which is great, because, you know, I buy a set of tires and I pay a tire tax, and I have no idea where that money goes to. It's supposed to go to help offset transportation, but I honestly don't see a result. But the revenue neutral and the incentive to do the right thing, is that a theory, or is that actually happening in some jurisdictions?
We do have some data that's coming out of some of these communities and municipalities that have implemented the variable pricing systems. So, for example, in Stratford, Ontario, residents have produced 35% less garbage and recycled 62% more since they were charged that $1.75 that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. This is another issue, actually, is that there's sort of a patchwork of different programs in place all across Canada. But for another example, there's Halifax, which has done a clear bag program. So basically what they did is they said, okay, you can have five clear plastic bags, and then you have one black bag, and after that you're going to have to pay for your garbage collection. And just for that, so that was like actually a free program for the five black bags plus one, and just for that type of program, Halifax system produced 24% decrease in garbage sent to landfills, and that's only since the program was introduced in 2015. So there's certainly some really exciting success stories out there, and in the United States they have over 5,000 communities that are using pay-as-you-throw systems, and they actually have even better data on how it's doing quite well at the community level to reduce waste.
But what caught my interest was the reducing your property tax if you do the right thing. Has that been introduced anywhere?
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is, again, because we have the patchwork of policy approaches across Canada, so it depends on the specific municipality. But, yes, it has often been coupled with the changeover to the pay-as-you-throw type of system. And ideally, you would have it as a really transparent line on your property tax bill, right? So you would have your normal amount that you would pay, and then you would have, like, a subtraction of the waste collection fees, so you can see it right there that you're paying less, and then where you do pay is where you go and purchase those special bags or the special tags that I had mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the pay as you throw. What's the other alternative?
Okay, the other policy tools that we looked at in the report, the next one that I'll talk about is the charges for single-use items. So we know this policy tool from a lot of jurisdictions in Canada that charge for plastic bags. And what we found is that the data from Canada wasn't great in terms of how well it's been doing to reduce the use of plastic bags, although most stores are participating. Companies that have filled in survey results have said that they've seen a significant reduction in plastic bags, but we did see that from international examples, such as the United Kingdom, found that a 9-cent charge on plastic bags were able to reduce their use by 60% to 80%. So a small charge on these single-use items has been proven to be able to reduce their use. And so our policy brief argues that this type of tool could potentially be extended to other areas. So it could be extended to food containers or single-use coffee cups or straws, those types of things. And really, you know, these are small little charges, you know, 5 cents or 10 cents. But it's enough to make people stop and question, okay, well, what are the alternatives? And is it worth investing in something else? And, you know, why is this charge there? And we believe that that type of financial signal will actually end up changing behavior.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the fact that, you know, there's a patchwork of regulations all across the area. Not even that. I live in a jurisdiction that just recently changed. Obviously, they changed their recycling supplier or contractor, and now all of a sudden I can recycle this, whereas a month ago I couldn't recycle that particular plastic. So how do we keep ahead of that curve?
The recycling is also, recycling is certainly a part of the solution because, as most people know, you end up saving a lot of raw materials and energy compared to producing the good from brand new. But at the same time, recycling also has a lot of challenges. And basically, municipal governments have to compete to find markets for the recycled material that they collect. And so, what probably happened in your case is when they changed contractors, they would have lost the original market of where the recycled products that they were collecting actually end up going. So it's unfortunately, in the absence of mandatory recycling, a lot of times municipalities are just hoping to get the most they can for the recycled goods that they collect in order to cover the cost of the program. And unfortunately, a lot of times this involves shipping the recycled material overseas, and it's often shipped by marine bulk cargo, which produces significant greenhouse gas emissions and is associated with a lot of other environmental challenges as well. We did mention in the report that that a lot of municipal recycling has been going from Canada has been shipped to China historically, but just recently China restricted, they put in heavy restrictions on what they would accept into their markets, in terms of the amount of contaminated material. So that's plastics that haven't been washed or when people throw in things that are not actually recycled material, and they end up contaminating the rest of the items in there. And so basically most Canadian jurisdictions have lost that end market of shipping things over to China and are sort of desperately now looking for other markets where they can send their recycled material. So recycling is actually, it can be a very effective solution, but it also can have these associated challenges. And if you can't find a final market and there's no mandatory recycling requirements, then there is a risk that some of the material won't end up being recycled like we all hope that it would be.
Right. It's a very important issue with something like 2/3 of garbage goes into the landfill. I guess we need to focus more on the let's prevent it rather than what do we do with it once we've got it. Catherine, I'm going to turn the interview over to you personally. What's your position at Smart Prosperity? How did you get there and where did you get your start? What was your interest in the environment to begin with?
Okay, well, thanks. So I'm a senior research associate here at the Smart Prosperity Institute. I've only been here about 7 months, and I've come from Environment and Climate Change Canada. So I was with the federal government for about 9 years before I started my position here. Before being with the federal government, I did my master's in economics at the University of Victoria, and that was where I really became interested in the environment. So I had done my undergraduate in economics without taking very many courses on environmental issues, and then I went over to University of Victoria to do my master's, and was lucky enough to work with a lot of professors that were interested in environmental issues, and ended up with a thesis advisor that was willing to let me look at some economic tools to incentivize renewable energy, particularly tidal stream energy. So I think it's important to know that a lot of disciplines are needed, and we're going to need solutions from sort of every field to help solve some of these environmental challenges, and certainly economic tools are important, but we need data and action from everybody. I don't know very many people that aren't interested in the environment. Almost everybody I know, enjoys going out and being in nature, or has some sort of outdoor sport that they like. And I think we're increasingly aware that this isn't something that is just a given, that we all have a responsibility to help protect it, help protect it for our children as well. So now I have two small daughters, and they are always watching me to make sure that I'm walking the walk of my talk, and that I'm making sure that I do my part in trying to reduce our own household waste, and making sure that we're going to hopefully leave the planet in a state that's better than we found it.
Yeah, that's great. So how can people find more about your particular report and Smart Prosperity Institute in general?
Thanks, Yano. So if you Google Smart Prosperity Institute, we'll pop up. We also have another initiative called the Smart Prosperity Leaders Initiative, so that would not be the website that you were looking for, but it's the Institute Smart Prosperity website, and then the policy brief is on economic policy tools to reduce household waste. So it should be the first policy brief on the homepage.
So again, that's institute.smartprosperity.ca, and the policy brief on the economic tools to reduce household waste. But there are many other reports that are equally valuable and interesting. Catherine Monahan, Senior Research Associate with Smart Prosperity Institute, thank you very much for joining us on Earth Matters.
Thank you, and have a great day.
Okay.